Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any absolute appeal to authority. Our guest today is the Australian artist Abdul Abdullah. His interdisciplinary approach is primarily concerned with the experience of the other in society. This and the wider topic of prejudice will be the focus of our conversation today. Well, hello, Abdul. Welcome to the Middle Way Society podcast.
G'day, Barry. Thanks for having me.
Okay, well, could we start, Abdul, by you telling us a bit about your background and why you decided to become an artist?
I guess I'm a 31-year-old Australian, who on my father's side is a seventh-generation Australian. Originally, we're convicts, sent away from England in 1815 for stealing two stamps and a watch chain. But on my mother's side, we're from Malaysia. Well, actually, originally from Indonesia, from an island called South Sulawesi, and the Bugis tribe, where apparently the boogeyman came from. But I myself am an artist. I'm the youngest of three brothers, all called Abdul, who all went to art school and all functioning artists in one way or another. And I guess I came from art from a journalism background. I dropped out of journalism school and I wanted to pursue something that wasn't necessarily – it was a similar function to journalism, but I wasn't burdened by any obligation to objective portrayals of stories or anything like that.
Okay. And you as an artist, is it a compulsion? Do you have to create? To what degree is it effort? To what degree is it hard work?
I'd say it's all hard work. I've been able to produce artwork for a long time, and drawing and things like that, those basic principles of making art have always been supported in my family, with my brothers and with my sister and that sort of thing. But I wouldn't say that I'm always that I always need to make work. I'm always making work in response to something.
Okay. And do those responses have a typical pattern?
Yeah, definitely. In the same way that a journalist would work, I'm generally responding to the world around me, whether it's a news story or to personal experience or to the experience of the people who are around me. It's sort of, I can't, due to the particular political circumstances that I find myself in, I can't help but respond to the world in the particular ways that I do.
Okay, and what type of artist are you? How would you describe yourself?
I guess I work across disciplines. The painting is a backbone of my practice, but I also work with photography and embroidery and performance and installation and all that sort of jazz. But I guess I've been described as a political artist.
Yeah, and in just practical terms, do you focus on any particular discipline? Or would you say you mainly a portrait or figurative artist?
Oh, definitely. I mostly work with figuration, so mostly portraits, but also the figure. I'm mostly interested in people. If I look at the world and the world is full of people problems, or the world's problems are all people problems. So if I can look at people and concentrate on that, I reckon I can do best to affect positive change.
Okay. And if there's one thing that you, it's a difficult question this, Abdul, but if there's one thing that you really wish to convey through your art, what would it be?
The one thing I'd like to do is to challenge people's perceptions. So put them in a position where they have to question how they perceive people and how much bias comes into that perception, and to sort of question the realities of that perception and whether or not it's a reasonable judgment that they're making about a particular group of people or individual.
Okay, and obviously a very common theme in your art is prejudice. And you began by saying a lot of your art is related to your own personal experience. So would you like to unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, no worries. So I'm a 31-year-old Muslim man who grew up in Australia. So I think I'm on the older cusp of a generation of Muslims in Australia and in the UK and America and in the West generally, who have grown up and had their entire formative years overshadowed by the war on terror, essentially. Yeah. So in the popular imagination, we're the bad guy, regardless of our lived experience or our actual actions. That stuff, our reality is irrelevant to how we're perceived by a broader society, we're the bad guys, essentially.
And to what degree, Abdul, do you actually experience prejudice, you know, in sort of everyday terms?
It's funny, like, I acknowledge as a man I've got a whole lot of different privileges, and one of them is that I don't cop racism on a day-to-day basis, like on the street. The racism that type of racism that I experienced growing up was mostly felt through my mother, who had like external signifiers of a religious identity, like she wore a hijab,
yeah,
and that's what identified her, and that's what drew people to, like, she's been assaulted, she's been attacked, like she's had things thrown at her from cars, people have yelled at her, like horrible abuse. But me being a boy, never really experienced that, and also I don't have any external signifiers, like I don't necessarily wear like a topi, or a jilabaya or anything like this, I just wear the clothes that I wear normally, you know what, yeah. I mean, but one of the bizarre situations that I found myself in having like the slightest public profile in Australia is that since having that public profile on the regular, I've received hate mail directly to my website or to my email address, and all that hate mail it's nothing to do with the quality of the work that I make or even what I'm making work about. It's entirely to do with my religious identity and how they perceive what people think that represents and what type of threat they think I am to their, like, their peace, I guess.
Sure. And how have you dealt with that hatred?
Like, at first I was really, like, confronted by it, like, for somebody to go like well out of their way to find some no-name artist who had some exhibition somewhere and to write them a letter about how crap they are, like I couldn't really believe it. But then on talking to other people who identify as Muslim in Australia who have any type of public profile, it's such a common experience, like everybody gets it. It's like, and to think there are that many people out there who would take the time out of their day to tell you your shit, it's pretty upsetting, but it also validates what you do.
It
validates your actions, yeah. Totally.
And women tend to be on the receiving end a lot more. Would it be all right in saying that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that Muslim women, particularly women who wear, like, hijabs or scarves, they cop it a lot more than dudes do. It's sort of like it's a known thing. And, like, after 9/11, you could see the tension in my own community in Perth where I grew up. Like, mums didn't want to let their kids out. And people were, like, pretty scared of being attacked. Like, the mosque was attacked straight away. People, like, practically hid themselves away until, well, hoping for things to blow over, but they never did. It's kind of bizarre. Like, I remember watching 9/11 as it happened on the TV and not really making the connection at that point, being, like, 14 or 15, that this, like, terrible act that was committed by strangers on the other side of the planet would have immediate repercussions in my life and my community's life.
I've just come back from a retreat, Abdul, entitled Working with Prejudice, and the main premise being that we're all prejudiced to a lesser or greater degree, but it's what we do about it that's key. To what degree would you agree with that?
I would say I agree with that completely, and part of the reason I make work is to challenge people's biases, but also to challenge my own biases, to put myself in situations where I'm, like, forced to rethink things or to question things, and sort of to be forever in a state of uncertainty, like working things out. Like, people have talked about, like, my progression or my path as an artist, but I've described it, like, you know, that, have you seen that movie Toy Story, the first one? Yeah, where Buzz Lightyear is talking about, like, he's, like, talking about flying, and then Woody goes, "You're just falling with style," and that's how I describe my progress, I guess. I'm just, like, stumbling through. I just happen to find my feet occasionally.
Yeah, well, I would definitely agree with that from looking at your art. I think it's fantastic. But so if we're going to try and pin down what prejudice actually means, is it in a way just having a fixed belief that's not sort of open to revision, that's not open to alternatives? You've decided this is what these people are like, and that's the view, and that's it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree that having sort of an unreasonable bias towards, like, a particular group of people based on things that aren't, like, reflective of the realities of the situation.
Yeah. Okay. So then, how can art help?
Well, I think art has got. There's so many beautiful things about art. Like, when I was much younger, I tried to make music and nobody listened, or it would work in an echo chamber. And maybe I was just a terrible musician, but I also tried to be a journalist. I was trying to study journalism.
Yeah.
And maybe as a 22-year-old, like my views weren't fully formed. And they're still not fully formed, obviously, but what it really like showed in my writing, I guess, and people weren't interested. But with art, there's something about offering you can be really generous in the way that you produce art, and that might sound really patronizing, but what I mean is that you can offer an audience several access points, and that's what I try and do with my work. Like, it's a strategy that I like undertake, is that I offer an aesthetic one, a conceptual one, a theoretical one, and a political one, like as many opportunities to engage a person as possible. And there can be sort of flux in that engagement as well. Like, it's not necessarily I'm not telling you how it is. I'm just telling you what I think. And I'm getting the information that exists in the world. I'm not inventing anything. I'm just grabbing what's already there, squishing it, I guess, through my brain filter, and giving it as an offering to my audience to sort of respond to and examine.
And I suppose when you think about visual art, which is at the moment, anyway, your main medium.
Definitely.
Visual art is often quite ambiguous by nature. Do you think in that sense it can, you know, when we talk about rigidity here, with prejudice, for example, can it help us to cultivate a tolerance of ambiguity in some sense?
I think so, definitely. Like, ambiguity is one of my favourite words, and I'm like, my work is often deliberately ambiguous, like where I'll use like different signifiers in the work, that if each signifier was a word in a sentence, the sentence wouldn't necessarily make sense. It would require like someone to sort of pick it apart and to look at it. Does that make sense?
Very much so, yeah. And I suppose, of course, art enables us to see things from the perspective of another person, which in a sense is arguably, when if you think from a sort of biological perspective, where empathy and compassion come from, and then perhaps the root of ethics too.
Definitely, and I think empathy is a key word here. Like, so much of what I do is about building empathic relations. I don't even know if empathic is a word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm building empathy between people. And so much of prejudice, I think, is to do with just not having empathy and not being able to put yourself, like sincerely be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. I think that anyone has the capacity to sort of, even if they disagree with someone entirely, to put themselves where they are and to sort of understand where they come from, or see the same evidence that they do and maybe come to a different conclusion, but understand how they got to their conclusion.
Okay. And do you ever get people who acknowledge that they're prejudiced? I've said that they've experienced a shift in any way through your work?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I think... I hope so, potentially. I think, like, I don't know if I'm giving myself too much credit by saying it, but I think I've definitely challenged people, and maybe that's the first step. Like, I don't think my artwork has changed anyone's mind necessarily, but I hope that it's provided ammunition for maybe one family member to speak to another family member about their politics.
Yeah. How has your art been received within the art world in general?
Generally, it's been pretty positive, and I understand that, like, the art world that I exist in, or at least the artists that I socialize with and I sort of have critical feedback from, we're in a bit of a very left-leaning bubble, like a safe sort of progressive bubble. It's a really weird industry where, like, it's all the artists are very left-leaning, but the people who run the industry, so perhaps the gallerists and the people that buy the artwork, are very right-leaning. So it's a constant sort of to and fro. I wonder if the people that purchase my work are really sort of, I wonder if they give a shit. But it's hard to really know.
And what about the Muslim community? What's been the general response there?
Well, generally, it's been positive, but it's a diverse community. And one of the things that I'd say with my work and with what I do in general is, it's battling is a strong word, but it's sort of resisting conservatism and resisting conservatism in my own community too. So there'll be members of my own community who will hate my guts as much as anyone else. But for me, they don't cause problems for me on a daily basis. So it's not something, a problem that I address consistently. It's like a conversation that I'll have when it comes up. But generally, in Australia anyway, and I'm sure it's the same in the UK, the bigger things that affect me are sort of like political parties, like the One Nation Party in Australia, who have come to power like entirely on an anti-Muslim sort of platform.
Okay, so well, on the subject of governance, what can governments do to reduce prejudice? Take, for example, what would be an appropriate immigration policy?
I think that we've got, like in Australia, definitely, there's a really tough immigration policy, and there's a lot of focus on the idea of illegal immigrants and boat people, which sort of feeds into this fear that people are going to lose some type of quality of existence in this country or lose some type of culture that they fear is going to go away. And I find that pretty rich, like particularly the focus on asylum seekers in Australia. Like we have, I think, 0.5% of global refugees apply for residency in Australia, and we've got offshore processing, which is like the equivalent of concentration camps in areas that they're horrible. Like offshore detention centres are like, we've just I'm getting stumbling on my words here, but there's recently been a release of the Nauru files, and Nauru is an island which we do offshore processing, and it seems to be this like cesspool of violence against inmates, and mental health problems that are really causing, so that will like cause problems further down the line, and the fact that the Australian government, like on both sides of government, still support these offshore processing facilities, I think is like atrocious. So in Australia, the first thing we can do is get rid of offshore processing. I think we've got the facilities and we've got the capacity to process people who want to come to the country a lot faster and a lot more effectively. The other thing is that like I live in I describe myself as a byproduct of colonization, because I'm not necessarily the product that the colonial enterprise had in mind, like that would exist in 2017. And by that I mean like expansionist European colonial enterprise that's like affected the whole world over the last 500 years. And like it's drawn all these maps, it's drawn all these like cartographers, European cartographers have drawn the boundaries of all these countries around the world. And now they're sort of suffering some of the blowback from these boundaries being drawn. I don't think there is such thing as a sort of a sincere, compassionate colonial mission. Like I don't think that was ever the case. I don't think really it was to go save people. It was to sort of, it was the exploitation and seizure of land, resources and labor. And that's what it was about across the board. And it's still affecting us now. Like I'm going to go on a bit of a rant if you bear with me. But it's so much of what prejudice that we feel in Australia and in the UK, I'm sure, comes from this like top down thinking where the people in power have to validate and justify the inhumane treatment of broad swathes of people across the planet so that they can take all their shit, essentially, like take their land, take their labor, take their resources, mine their resources, take the oil out of the ground. And if you looked at it, if you looked at the people that existed on those places that are going to be exploited, if you looked at them as people and as equal people, you couldn't find it within yourself to sort of treat them so badly. So the trick the powerful use is to sort of project this monstrosity on these people, or some type of like make them look inhuman. And the moment that you treat someone anything less than human, it is like licensed to treat them inhumanely. And that has resulted in so many atrocities across the world. And the atrocities that we're still seeing today are a direct result of that. I think it's not, for me, this like what's happening now in the world is not, hasn't come out of nowhere. It's part of a long, long line of people treating people badly.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I think you often see, you know, if you want to go to war with people, I think, first of all, you make them ugly. And then you get them doing evil for evil's sake, you know. So you dehumanize them basically, you know. Like it happened in the First World War, the Germans were supposed to be eating babies and things like this, and then and you saw it. The similar thing happened in Nazi Germany with the Jews, how they were depicted.
Absolutely. You saw it in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yeah. And not saying that there aren't bad things that happened there, but the fact that they needed to justify like an unjust war.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They depicted the people as horrible.
But then, just thinking about immigration, I don't know if it's this, I imagine it's the same in Australia. What tends to happen when people come from overseas and as immigrants to a new country? They don't get placed in well-to-do areas. They often get dumped in really underprivileged areas, and certainly in the UK, there seems to be very little provision for maintaining the community of the people who are already there, and very little effort spent on integration. And then it's very easy for sort of liberal thinkers like me to, you know, to just brand people who get dumped on, you know, as racists and bigots. But, you know, community is also a very organic, precious thing too. And so what role does governments play when people come into a new culture that the people within that culture are also protected? So, you know, would a lot of problems be ameliorated or lessened if that was taken into account?
I think those problems would be lessened if the people who existed in the community beforehand felt secure in themselves, and like the type of confidence that comes with a little bit of money in your pocket, you're less likely to like be resistant of a new culture or like a different looking neighbor. Like, I think that comes down to it a lot, like the fact that people are worried about losing something of themselves, or I was saying before, losing a quality of their own life. But if the quality of their own life is shit already, then that's like sort of a breeding ground to create a horrible situation. Sure, so if you were to make the situation in those communities better before people came in, I think that would be the best for everyone.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm always a bit wary, Abdul, of actually trying to sort of get what the meaning is of a piece of work, because I think in many ways you can lose the mystique or the interaction that occurs between a piece of art and the experience of that work of art. But are there any sort of pieces of your work that you might find interesting just to tell us the story behind it at all that you particularly?
Yeah.
So for example?
Okay. Say for example, I've got a body of work from 2014 called Siege, and there are some problematic works within that body of work that I wouldn't necessarily make again. Like one which featured a hijab that I don't necessarily feel like I have the authority to sort of speak on. But regardless, I don't want to hide from the work, and I'm happy to be called out on it. And I've kind of given a strange context, so bear with me. I'll go back to the beginning and sort of explain the work. The 10-part series consists of self-portraits, but also a female figure who's in a few of the works, and we're wearing a mask from the Planet of the Apes movie. But from the 2001 Planet of the Apes movie, the Tim Burton version with Marky Mark in there. And I've used this mask to sort of talk about the abject portrayal of the other, or how I feel that I'm perceived by people who would perceive me as monstrous because of my religious identity. And how it started was like, I'm sure we'll have the image maybe in the YouTube thing,
so we can
have a little bit of visual context. But how it started was I was watching the original Planet of the Apes movie, the 1968 version, on my laptop. And on the TV, in the background, there was an old news broadcast of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan when the Soviets were invading in the 80s. And there on the TV, you had these Mujahideen, who would then become Taliban eventually, were riding on horseback with Kalashnikovs across their back across a desert landscape. And then on my laptop, in the original Planet of the Apes movie, there were these guerrilla figures with science fiction Kalashnikovs across their back on horseback, riding across the desert landscape, hunting these humans. And for me, there was an immediate correlation between this depiction of the monstrous, like, abject other. And I made up a word for it, like a combined abject and objectification. So this abjectification of the monstrous other. And that for me was a seed to create a whole body of work and like talking about that monstrous perception of people who, you know, of the other, I guess. Yeah. I'm repeating myself a little bit, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I was very, very much impacted by that work, so it'll be interesting to see if we get any feedback from the listeners. Anyway, my final question, Abdul, the middle way, as we understand it in the middle way society, is the idea that we sort of make better judgments by avoiding fixed or dogmatic beliefs about things, whether those are positive or negative. That then throws us back on experience, so we're left in this sort of messy, uncertain middle. But it's arguably in the messy, uncertain middle that we actually start to get to grips more adequately with the phenomena that we encounter. Now, how might that relate to what we've been talking about today?
It's funny, even after what we've been talking about today, it feels the only thing I'm certain of is that there's a whole lot more that I don't know than what I do know. And I think I've said that in the most roundabout way that I possibly could. But yeah, that art and the intention of, like the intention of the artist when they make a work and the way that the work is read, it's not necessarily a direct correlation. It's not something that has a direct, well, it has a relationship. Art can be so ambiguous, and there's power in ambiguity, I think, and that's one of the reasons that I really like doing it. And that's one of the reasons that I shifted to making art from studying journalism, is that I didn't have to be specific. I wasn't burdened by objectivity, and I could like be as subjective as I like without, you know, getting in trouble.
Okay, well that was a great answer, and all I can say, Abdul, is that I find your work absolutely fascinating and really moving at times. And yeah, I hope the people listening and looking at the, if you're just listening to the audio on iTunes, but I'd highly recommend looking at the link as well to the YouTube slideshow, because there'll be plenty of Abdul's work on there. Anyway, thank you very much for talking to me today, Abdul. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Barry. I appreciate it.
You can find out more about Middle Way philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.